What are the differences that knowledge can make? Something that I contemplate a lot has to do with the different disparities of knowledge that people can have depending on where they grew up. It's no secret that I'm a kid who was born and raised in the South Bronx, and a lot of the things that I fight for today have to do with closing the knowledge gap for people. But oftentimes that knowledge is solely centered on the very specific tangible things within health and fitness, like how to start working out or how to start your nutrition journey. But in many places like the Bronx, there are a lot of other factors that are at play, and there are a lot of other factors that get in the way of those knowledge pieces. I started doing a lot of reading recently about the food quality gap, and traditionally, the food quality gap in places like the Bronx have been referred to as food deserts. Well, some of the reading I've been doing has been by this woman called Karen Washington, who is basically the mother of urban farming in Black and Latino communities in places like New York City. And Karen coined the phrase food apartheid. And food apartheid gets the idea that you can put a Whole Foods in certain neighborhoods like the Bronx and certain places like the Bronx, and people won't all of a sudden become healthy. And people all of a sudden won't be eating all this great food, because at Whole Foods you still have options that are unhealthy, that are very much available in abundance. And part of what food apartheid gets to is the fact that knowledge is truly that barrier for a lot of people. And knowledge is the barrier that, for me, held me back in terms of my nutrition journey, my physical journey. And that's what holds a lot of people back as well. Today, I'm talking to my good friend, Kevin Brooks. Kevin is an educator, a college access coordinator, and he's also the host of the Live from the Bronx podcast, which, by the way, I made a guest appearance on this past week, so definitely go check them out. But my conversation with Kevin today is a little bit different from the conversation that I have with some of my other friends in the fitness and the nutrition space, because part of the goal for my conversation with Kevin was to talk a lot about the other factors that happen in places like the Bronx. A lot of the disparities that are very much tied to social justice and education. And there are a lot of common themes that come up in things like college access that are also very present in health and nutrition and fitness as well. So I think you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Kevin, because you're going to start to get a bit of an understanding as to what life is like in places like the Bronx for students of color, and how those issues are tied to the greater fight and the greater challenge of trying to correct health and fitness and nutrition in some of these spaces. I'm Rich Sabata, the founder and editor of BodegaBody.com, and this is the Bodega Body Podcast.
Yo, smoking on top shelf Guido, and it's all over my hands like Cheetos. All she wanna do is dance in tight Speedos, relax in a mansion like the Migos. I can't even sell the shit that I smoke. This shit cause bands like the Beatles. And we watch movies like it's Regal, then go cash out on seafood, send her home with a quarter ounce of diesel. Girl, that boy don't even feed you. Yeah, he saw me spread it like a measles.
All right, so welcome back to the show. Shout out to my boy David James for providing the intro to this week's episode. And of course, you can find David on SoundCloud, Apple Music, and Spotify. With me this week, I've got a really special guest. Guys, every time I see this guy's name pop up on my social media feed, I'm brought back to a very, very interesting and probably the most influential period of my life, and the influential period of a young person's life. With me today, I've got an educator. He's a counselor and a co-host of the Live from the Bronx podcast. Please welcome Kevin Brooks. KB, what's up, man?
Yo, thanks so much for having me. Thank you for that wonderful intro. I feel special. And I'm excited to be here on your platform and seeing all the amazing things that you're doing. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. The interesting part about how we met is actually a lot to do with the work that you do. But before we get into all that, before we talk into our history a little bit, I need to know, because I ask everyone this, the last 4 months or so has been crazy for everyone, from issues of social justice to the global pandemic that we're all experiencing. So how have you been, man?
Yeah, so it ebbs and flows. It's interesting, yeah. Right? So like at the very beginning, I went through this cycle where I was addicted to news. Okay. So I had CNN on 24/7, like literally. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much all that I was doing. Then I went through cycles where I was like, well, I'm not gonna watch any news. Like, this is just bad for me, right? So I finally found a balance with that, right? Where I'm able to watch the news, but I'm not like to the point where I have to, like, where I have to have it on all day.
Yeah.
I definitely was watching more Netflix than I generally do, right? Yeah.
Did you watch Tiger King like everyone else?
Tiger King, I couldn't get into. I was like, all right, this is just too much for me.
Yeah, fair.
But I did like random shows on Netflix. There's the show All American about this like high school football. I did that.
Cool.
My wife actually bought me a PS4.
Nice, great wife.
Yeah, right. I haven't been a gamer in like 15 years. Wow. But she bought us, if we're gonna be in the house, like, let's have a PS4. She got two controllers, we got Mortal Kombat, so we've been playing together. Yeah, and I've been reading more. I've been reading a lot more. And I think for me, what I've been really using this time to just kind of figure out ways to be my best self. So there are things that I've been putting off that I actually got to do during this time, right? So I refinanced my student loans. That's something that I've wanted to do, right? I signed up for a couple of, and we're going to talk about this. I signed up for a couple of virtual races.
Cool.
And I am really kind of getting myself ready for my next school year mentally.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff there, man. And I'll say that I think everyone needed a little bit of something different. And still, to this point, because, we're not necessarily back to quote-unquote normal, still needs something a little bit different. And whatever that different means for them, I'll say that, like, I took a probably good 2 month break from putting out anything really on social media that wasn't, like, news related. Because for me, I was like, okay, honestly, the most important thing right now is that people stay informed and the people that I'm close to stay informed. I'll say that, like, I probably had a very unhealthy relationship with my New York Times app. And that thing was going off like every 5 minutes, and there was like another breaking news about something happening in New York. There was another breaking news about whatever new tiny piece of information we had about either the virus or, the Black Lives Matter movement. And you get so hooked on the dings on your phone and the different notifications, and sometimes you just got to put it down. And I reached a point a couple weeks back where I was like, you know what, I'm taking a step back completely. I'm not looking at my phone. I deleted everything off of my phone for a couple weeks, and I was like, all right, like we're taking a breather here, and we are, going to get our mental space in the right place, just to spend time with the people that we love. So really glad to hear that you are doing well. You got to try to do some amazing things while you were figuring out everything.
Yes, it was necessary. So
all right, so going back to how we met, what's really interesting is that, I called you an educator, and the way we had met was, God, I am going to date myself right now, but I want to say like 10 years ago or so, or 11 at this point, when I was a high school student. And my principal of my high school at that time, she had told me, Rich, you are an incredibly bright kid, and I want to make sure that you go to college, and I want to make sure that you have the ability to be able to do that. And I know your grades aren't as hot, so I want to make sure that you can like prepare for the SATs, that you have someone to work with you to apply to college. And at this time, I was a member of my student government. I was pretty active in my student body, but my grades weren't always the best. And I remember she passed me the sheet of different centers that you could go to around the Bronx, of places that'll help you get ready for college. And you know, on this list of places, I looked for whatever was closest to home for me. So I ended up finding this this place called the College Access Center. It was you know, just a couple blocks away from where I grew up in the Bronx. And there, I was taking SAT classes. I was getting ready for writing all of my college resumes, and I was assigned to a counselor, young cat by the name of Kevin Brooks, and that's how we met. And so I have always, I think at that time, I don't think I appreciated for how important of a figure you were in my life, but reflecting on it, you were a really important person in my life, man. So one, how weird is it for you to be talking to me right now? But two, how did you get into doing the work that you do?
Yeah. Well, one, thank you for sharing that. And since we're being honest, you didn't appreciate it then. We can be honest about it. No, you. I actually really enjoyed working with you. I didn't think that you enjoyed working with me at the time. But it's fine. But I always knew that you were a really smart kid, a really gifted young man. And it's amazing to kind of see where you are now, right? So it's the beautiful thing about, and I'm going to get to your question about how I got here, right? But the beautiful thing about the work that I'm in, right, is getting to see the young people that I work with, right, go off to college, go off to graduate, go off to go off into the world and do amazing things, right? And the relationship changes, right? It gets to a point where now these are your peers, right? Mm-hmm. Because when I was doing the work, I wasn't that much older than y'all anyway, right? It's like 5 to 7 years shrinks over time. You know what I mean?
A lot, yeah.
So that's like what I love about it. But to answer your question, how I got there, so I... born and raised in the Bronx, and grew up in a single parent household. But my mom always stressed education. So my mom's a teacher. So education was the thing that had to happen.
Right, of course.
In the house, right? It was either you're going to college or you're going to college.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
There was no other option, right?
Yeah.
So that was something that always had to happen. And I'm starting with my experience because my experience directly informs how I got into the work.
So, of course.
At 17, I didn't have any interest in college, right? Like I knew it was just the people in my family had done it, right? It was people had done that. But for me, at 17, I cared more about making money, right? So I wasn't ever a street kid. Like I wasn't a kid who was gonna do things that were illegal, but if there's a quick legal way to make money,
right,
I was going to find it.
Right. I get it.
Like I almost got roped into a few pyramid schemes because I just was like, oh,
love it.
Really?
were you selling water filters on Fordham Road?
Listen, if someone had come to me with that, yeah, I would have. It would have been great. Until it wasn't, right? So I realized that none of those were like viable options, right? Like, You're not going to get rich from any of those things, right? From any of those opportunities.
Yeah.
So I had fairly decent grades in high school. I went to high school in Harlem, this school, Manhattan Center for Science and Math. So I had fairly decent grades. And I wouldn't ever call myself a school person per se, right?
Right.
Like I was able to do it, right? I'm very fortunate that I was born with a certain level of intellect. I was able to, not in a cocky way. Because again, I'm not going to say I was a good student, right? I'm being honest, right? I was okay. So I didn't really have a great college counselor. I was like, well, if I'm going to do this college thing, I heard of Fordham University before. I don't really know much about it. They say it's a good school, quote unquote, right? I have decent grades. Let's do that.
Yeah.
So the reason why I say that I didn't get great college advisement is because I didn't go visit the school first. So I had never seen Fordham University before I started. And so I am, so I'm a black dude from the Bronx, right? And yeah. I'm like, all right, well, Fordham University is on Fordham Road, right? It's
close by.
There you go, right? So I'm like, and the Bronx, especially Fordham Road, a lot of black folks, a lot of Latinx folks.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel right at home. This is great, right? Yep. That was the extent of my research.
Oh, God.
So I got on campus, right? and it was, so for the listeners, it was a PWI. So if you're not familiar, not what it was, it is a PWI. PWI is a predominantly white institution, right? Mm. And the thing about going to a PWI is there's very specific things, very specific ways that you might interact with students, certain things that you might feel, right?
Yeah.
And if you are not prepared for that, right, you're going to have a difficult time. I got there and I had a difficult time. My fault, you're about to say something.
No. I was going to say that I will say that there is a really interesting thing that I think sometimes a lot of white folks don't necessarily understand, right? Because when a lot of times when you're a white person and you grow up in a predominantly white area, you don't always feel like the minority. So the way I always describe it, especially for folks here in New York, if you've ever walked through Chinatown and all of a sudden all of the signs are in Chinese, all the people around you are in Chinese, you're like, whoa, I'm in a completely different place and I don't necessarily feel like I belong. And I have this conversation with my girlfriend every time we go into Chinatown. And there's this really interesting thing, a feeling that I think some people, like white people, experience for the first time when they're in those kinds of situations. And the thing I like to say is that's how people of color oftentimes feel in the situations when we're going to a PWI. You know, when we are transplanting ourselves from places like my high school and your high school, where it's predominantly Latinx and black, you know, population, to now being in a completely different world.
Exactly. 100%, right? That analogy kind of hit the nail on the head. So I'm there and I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel like I belong. I'm not necessarily enjoying it. There were some things that helped me. One, I was very fortunate that I met a good circle of people. That was helpful. I ended up finding the Black Student Union. I ended up eventually becoming the vice president of it. And yeah. I was able to kind of really, and the other thing that happened while I was there is I found youth development work. Which literally changed my life. So I went into Fordham with the mindset of I was going to go into economics and business administration. That was the plan, which there's nothing wrong with at all, right?
Right.
But that was the goal. So I was like, if I have to do this college thing, I'm going to do it on my own terms, and I'm going to come out and make tons of money. I'm going to be on MTV Cribs. That was a show back in the day, if you're not familiar, where rich people show you their house. That was the most shallow thing in life. But that was an actual show and I used to watch it. And I was like, I'm gonna be on there one day.
That show was great.
It wasn't it? but while I was there, I realized that I cared more about helping people. Like I cared more about helping young people specifically. I had a whole bunch of internships in youth development work. I was like, wow, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I graduated in 2008. So if you know anything about 2008 was a really rough time to graduate, right? It's kind of a cycle, right? So now we're in a pandemic. So anyone who graduated this year, 2020, right? This was a difficult year to graduate, yeah, right?
Definitely.
So this was kind of in some ways similar. Obviously there's huge differences, right? People weren't dying from a virus, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of the economy, there are definitely parallels. So I graduated in 2008 and I was fortunate to find a job at something called the College Access Center, right? And I found it on Idealist. So I didn't know anything about college access. I didn't know it was a field.
Yeah.
Here was the extent of my knowledge. And again, looking back, it was like really shallow, right? It was, well, I went to college so I can help people go to college. Right? Like that makes sense.
That's interesting.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
it's what I found out is it's a lot more nuanced than that, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's
especially when you deal with the rich Sabatas of the world.
Exactly, right? Oh, we're going to get there. So I found it's a lot more nuanced than that, right? There's so much to know, right? Yeah. And your process, your individual process is not everyone's process, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why not everyone can do it in the same way, right? Which is why you need someone to, if it was a one size fit all, you could just write a book and then just like, this is how you apply to college. No, there's more to it. So while I was there, I had one of the best mentors I possibly could have had. Her name is Allison Palmer. She's still the director of the College Access Center. Oh, and she's phenomenal. The best, to date, the best boss I've ever had because she pushed me. She challenged me. At my first job, I didn't know a lot, but I thought I had a I thought because I had a degree from Fordham that I knew some stuff. Mm. Like I thought I was like, but I have a degree from Fordham. What do you mean? No, there was so much that I didn't know, and so much that I didn't know that I didn't know. But what I loved about the job was I was getting to work with young people and kind of support them through the process in a way that I didn't feel that I had gotten supported through the process. And I was able to kind of do that for other people, right? And I was able to meet students like you, right? Who I was able to kind of see, oh, this young man is promising. This young man is going to like do some really cool, amazing things. And with the, like, and social media is such an amazing thing because when I started, we had Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Facebook actually started while I was in college. So like my first year was 04. I'm really dating myself, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I graduated college in 08 and Facebook started like 04. So when I first graduated, there wasn't like a ton of social media like there is now. But I bring up social media to say this. It's when you were doing the work before, like students afterward would go out into the world and like you imagine they're gonna do really great things. But now with social media, you kind of sometimes get to see some of the things that they're doing, right? So for you, getting to see you doing this podcast, right? And getting to see your whole lifestyle transformation has been amazing. Mm. And it's been amazing to kind of watch it from a distance and now getting to kind of interact with you and be on this is actually really cool. So that was a really long-winded way of saying how I got to, how I got into the work.
Yeah, man. You know, what's so interesting is that I'm an incredibly reflective person. I think most people who've known me for a couple years know that like I often take time to like break down specific times in my life, and I try to peel back the layers of everything that was going on in my mind. And I think about myself at that point in my life, and I remember my mindset at the time was I'm gonna laugh at this because anyone who's known me long enough, I thought that, you know, my shit didn't stink. And I thought that I knew it all. And in my high school, I felt a lot of times like a fish out of water. I felt like the smart kid that no one knew was actually smart. And my main goal at that time was to get away fast and far from the Bronx, and I needed to like experience life and experience the world. But this funny thing has happened over, you know, that time, in the near decade since those days, and you know, I realized like, oh no, like I want the Bronx and I need the Bronx and everything about the Bronx is me, and everything that like the man I am today was 100% influenced from that space. And I live in Williamsburg now, and I'm like, man, like there's no sazón here. Like I'm like, where's the graffiti? Where's the, you know, where's the Dominican food? Where's the, you know, that culture, that vibrance that I crave all the time. And I deal with this stuff constantly, but so I always come back to that time in my life when I realize like, you know, holy crap, man, you've come a long way. And I think that part of my desire to start Bodega Body was to reconnect in many ways with where I came from, because like it's always funny, I always felt like a fish out of water. I sound like a fish out of water because every time I meet someone they're like, Rich, you don't sound like you're a kid from the Bronx. I'm like, what does a kid from the Bronx sound like?
Facts. That's the question to ask, right? shout out to microaggressions, right? What do you mean? Yeah,
seriously. But what I tell them is like, look, man, my mom was born on a farm in the Dominican Republic. My dad came to this country, did a lot of odd jobs, became a chef. There was no one around to teach me English. Like, TV taught me English, and that's why I sound the way I sound. It's because I watched the news, I watched Barney, and that's where I picked up my English from. The news and Barney.
There you go.
So even though at first glance, some people are like, well, who is this guy? The Bronx is truly, truly me. And I think part of what I wanted to get out of this conversation today is to be able to paint the picture and to reveal the layers that go into holistic health and holistic wellness, mental health, mental wellness. And oftentimes we talk a lot about, and I talk a lot about, the barriers that exist to health and fitness from the things that are kind of obvious, right? Like, if you're a big guy like I was, going to a gym might seem intimidating, and that's kind of obvious. But if you are coming from the places where we come from, there is a lot of other factors that are at play in terms of someone's health. And so part of the goal for this conversation today is to be able to shine a light on some of that, and to be able to show the world that, you know, there's a lot of great potential in the places that come from, and in the place that we are from. And so I just hope to show some of that through our chats, and to be able to get your perspective on young people and some of the barriers that they face. Part of what I find incredibly interesting about the work that you do is the fact that it seems tough, right? Like, you are dealing with kids who were like me. You are dealing with kids who go through a lot. And, you know, I can imagine this year, out of any year, there were a lot of barriers. So how do you stay motivated in a line of work that can at face value seem incredibly intimidating and incredibly sort of draining?
Yeah, so that's valid. And I'll answer this way, right? So I don't do as much self-care stuff as I need to. Mm. But self-care is huge.
Of course.
So I'm actually doing a summer job, and one of the acronyms that they have is PTA, Protect the Asset. The asset meaning yourself, right? Mm. So before you can help anyone else, you have to make sure that you're good. In terms of the motivation, I have this belief that every young person that I work with has the potential to do something out in the world, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And different people have different skill sets and different things that they want to achieve. But every young person that you encounter has the potential to do something great, yeah. right? To do something. And what great looks like for them is going to be different across the student, of course, right?
100%.
But if you don't really believe that, then one, you should leave the work. And once you stop believing that, then you're not able to do the work anymore. Hmm. So that's kind of the thing that keeps me pushing, right? And then I have case studies. I have students who have come back and are doing amazing things. Like, I have students who have master's degrees working on PhDs. I have students who are my colleagues in the field, right?
Yeah.
I have students who are scientists. I have students who are like doing all these super dope, amazing things that I couldn't do, right? Yeah. But I was just there for a fraction of their journey, right? Yeah. But an important fraction, right? An important piece of it, right? But I say all that to say, the thing that keeps me motivated, right, is that this is important,
yeah.
right? These young people are important, and they deserve opportunities, and they deserve mm-hmm. someone who is going to kind of be there and give them those opportunities, right? And support them, right? You know, access is such an important thing. And we're gonna talk about the access.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I'll say the motivation for you is one piece, but when you've got a student that is dealing with the issues of the world, right, and is dealing with stuff at home, whether that be family issues, whether that be pressures from their environment, how do you go about trying to find the thing that will get to that student? Because obviously it's different for everyone, but walk me through your conversation process.
Yeah, right. So I think I love that you said that every student is different, right? Because that's super important, because it's not a one size fits right. all, right? But I think a starting place for a lot of the conversation is like, what is it that you like? What is it that you're interested in, right? Because if we could figure out what the thing is that you like, the thing that makes you, that drives you, right?
Yeah.
And some students are going to be a lot more self-aware and introspective than others. Some students can tell you, right? These are the things that drive me, right? Yeah. And I think back to my 17-year-old self, right? The things that drove me, I wasn't super enlightened. It was money, right? That was the thing, right? So if you could say, hey, well, if you go to college, if you major in this, these are some of the opportunities that you could have. Like, that was a simple one. That was it, right? For some people, it's maybe helping their family, right? Like, I want to be able to kind of help my family, right? So finding out the thing that is like, what is the thing that is kind of getting you going? And it's, I'm not going to say it's that easy where a 17-year-old will always know.
Of course.
but that's kind of what you're getting at, right? Because if we could figure out what it is that is your interest, right? And we can kind of craft something around that.
Yeah.
And so that's a part of it.
I'm over here smiling because you must have ingrained that somewhere in my brain. So something I don't think I've told you. So I do volunteer work with an organization called iMentor. Shout out iMentor. They are an organization here in New York City where they place working professionals as mentors with high school students who, as they are getting ready for college. And so I once a month meet with a student who is getting ready for their college readiness process. And I will say, though, number one, the first thing that I ask that student is, what is it that you like, right? Like, what is it that you're into? So we can get to the heart of how we can get you there. And it's just, it's really weird because you must have planted a chip in my head like 10 years ago, and that has stuck with me. But it's such a vital tool for human listening and human interaction, right? Like, that's something that, you know, people who work in corporate America can learn. That's something that partners can learn. It's just like, get to the heart of what someone else wants and what someone will find validation and truth in, and that'll give them joy, and you can start to get somewhere in a conversation.
It's 100% true, right? And I think sometimes as the adults, as the old people, we think that we know. We think we know better, and we think we know best. And no, it's you don't. Sometimes it's shut up and listen, right? They will tell you the things that they want, right? Sometimes they can articulate it verbally, sometimes through their actions, sometimes through any means. But sometimes you just have to shut up and listen, right?
Yeah.
Like the way I look at youth development, right, which is what I call this category of work, right? I do it through a college access lens, right? College and post-secondary planning, but it's all youth development, right? It's all working with young people. The analogy that I didn't come up with, that I heard a long time ago, but it stuck with me, is in this car, you are the driver as the young person. I'm in the passenger seat, right? Once I'm in the driver's seat, it's now about me, right? And that's not what it's about, right? So I'm always in the passenger seat when I'm doing this youth development and stuff. But it's hard, man, right? You kind of hit on a lot of like everything that's happening in the world. This has been the roughest year that I've ever had to do this work for a number of reasons.
I can imagine.
I've had students who have literally lost parents, right, due to COVID, right? We've had to like try to contextualize, right? Like the police brutality and police murdering of Black bodies, right?
Yeah.
So, and not that that's new, right? That's not new, but this is all compounded, right?
Yeah.
It's it's pandemic, right? It's police brutality and police murders, right? It's seeing your neighborhoods on fire, right?
Yeah.
Like these, all of these different traumatic things, right? Hmm. And just so we're clear, right? I'm not pro looting or condemning looting. I'm just saying these are things that happened, right? Right. Like these are all of the things,
of course,
that young people are seeing, right? And how are they going to, without a place to kind of like, to kind of process that, right? As a youth developer, as one of the faces of the school, we have to talk about this.
Yeah, right? Of course.
And I think I would be remiss if I didn't, right? It would be easy on the surface to try to say, all right, well, we have to just talk about your plan for next year. Let's not worry about those things.
Yeah.
No, but I'd be missing an opportunity and it wouldn't be authentic.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, man, that like, it's hard enough for us adults to deal with it, right? Like, it's hard enough for us to process everything that's going on. I can't imagine, like, what, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old me would be thinking right now. Like, I was, you know, fortunate enough. Like, I was in high school when Barack Obama was elected president, right? And everyone told me, like, Rich, you're going to be like Barack Obama one day. Like, that was the stuff that I was told, right? And those were the things that I had as motivators. So I cannot imagine where this, all this dark stuff that's happening in the world, how you can begin to process some of that, and how you can begin to work through some of that when you know, and even care about like a college application when, you know, you lose a family member to this disease that like our administration doesn't really seem to care about that much. So yeah, you know, it's tough, yeah, man. It's tough.
Yeah, right. And I think again, it's about me not having my own agenda, right?
Of course.
So there are times when we're gonna have a meeting, and today during the meeting we were supposed to do your financial aid application or whatever, but with everything happening, you're not in the headspace. Then I gotta say, you know what? We're gonna figure out another time to do this financial aid application.
Yeah.
But this is what's important right now. What's you and what you're feeling and what's right in front of me, right? Mm. This is the thing that matters right now, and I said this to my, I said this at graduation this year, and I said it to my students several times throughout the year. This is the strongest graduating class, right? That definitely the Department of Education, but that this country has ever seen, right? This, just having gone through the things that they've gone through, this is the strongest graduating class. And I will say it and I will mean it, right?
Yeah.
Because this stuff is not normal. This stuff is not okay. This stuff is not regular. This is not the type of stuff, like I'm trying to think of what I would have, how I would have processed stuff as a 17-year-old. Like, and the answer is I don't know.
Right. Yeah, man. You led me right into the next thing that I wanted to chat about. Is that whole idea of generational knowledge and the idea of passing down knowledge from, you know, grandparents to parents. I think we oftentimes think about economic disparity in this country having a lot to do with, you know, land value and property. But I think the bigger root and the bigger issue oftentimes has a lot to do with knowledge and knowledge that you are able to pass down from grandparent to child and so on and so forth. And I think actually that's part of the issue that we face in our communities around the health and the nutrition space. It's the, well, my parents didn't necessarily know what it really meant to eat healthy. My parents didn't really know what it meant to live a healthy lifestyle. Like, they knew you should probably exercise. They knew you should probably cut back on certain foods based off of random things their doctors would tell them. But they don't have that knowledge base. And I think the problem with that our communities are fighting to correct now is how do we change the landscape for ourselves when our starting mark in terms of knowledge, in terms of economic opportunity, is, you know, decades, if not hundreds of years behind. And I think that is often the biggest thing that that we have to try to communicate in these kinds of conversations. It's the knowledge base that we truly try to get to. And I think that's applicable both on the food and nutrition side, but also on the access to college and education side.
No, 100%. And like I said before, you don't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's rough, right? I think, and you hit the nail on the head, it's hundreds of years behind, right? In a lot of these spaces, right? Think about it like this, right? We had our first Black president in, 2008, yeah. Right? So like, so literally in a whole bunch of these spaces, hundreds of years behind, right?
Yeah.
Just thinking about things like the number of like Black and Latinx CEOs, right? It's, you know what I mean? Just all of these different things that we are behind in, but it has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is whoever's listening, regardless of how old you are, right?
Yeah.
You have to start somewhere, right? So even simple things can have lasting effects, right? So like saying, you know what, I'm going to open up a savings account, right? Again, right, any economics people will tell you a savings account does not get you the best interest rate, right? There's so many more, like you're going to get at most 2%, probably less than that, 1.something%, right? And I'm not going to get too technical, right? But but if you had no savings account before and you were saving nothing, now you've moved in the direction, right? And after you've done that, then maybe you could say, you know what? Well, all right, a money market account might get me a little bit more. Okay. Well, maybe I feel a little more aggressive. I'm going to open up an investment account, right? Yep. Or I'm going to open up a Roth IRA now, right?
Yep.
So again, right, the idea is that starting, because I think we sometimes have analysis paralysis, right? Where it's like, oh my God, I don't know what to do, but you can move. Right, you can take a step, right?
Oh yeah.
And you can do something today, and your future self will thank you for doing that thing.
Oh yeah. I will tell you, man, that like I have a couple friends, and again, this is I think a benefit of like listening a lot to the people that I've had the fortune of being around, and I've gotten to know again based off of the job opportunities that I've had. But I've started learning about the stock market. And I started learning about how to invest, how to open certain accounts, how to file for those things, the money that you make on your taxes. And I actually, I started investing this year. Might not have been the best year to, but.
Yes and no.
Because I'll tell you, I have a little bit of money in Beyond Me, and Beyond Me, it's doing really well.
There you go.
But man, those are not things that I was taught, and those are not. My mom would have known anything about the markets, right? Like, her concept of money is you get it from your boss, and then you spend it on rent and food, and that's it. And that's really like the extent of it. And that was the extent of, even like from an education standpoint, she knew like, all right, you're going to college because I said you're going to college, similar to you, right? Like my parents were like, I came to this country, I fought for something. You're going to get your act together. And so I think blessed with that luck of having that parent who was like at least saw the value in it, even though they weren't able to quantify it. But you were gonna say something.
No, and let's own that, right? Own the value in that, right? So here's the thing: you're supposed to do better than your parents' generation, right? That's supposed to be the thing. And your mom, she gave you the you're going to college, right? And you did, and you finished. And now, if you choose to have children, right, your children, right, will have all the knowledge that you have so that they can do better than you did, right, with whatever you leave them with to start with so that they can have that, like, for themselves as well. And that's really what it's about. So I challenge anyone, right, to wherever you're starting, right, to do something, right, mm-hmm. to do something. And something could get your kids could be getting a book for yourself on financial literacy, right? That's like, I don't have any money to invest right now. I don't have any money to put anywhere. I don't even have a savings account. Yeah, but you can Google something. You can go on Google and you can learn. Like, there's always something that you can do. So that's kind of my thing, right? Don't like don't let your current situation define what's going to be what's next, because you, there's always something to do. And this is not to dismiss poverty. Your poverty is a real 100% thing. Like, poverty is, I don't want it to come off as easy. Like, I'm saying, oh, this is super easy. And no. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, do not be stagnant, right? Regardless of what your situation is, there is something that can be done. So that's kind of my philosophy.
That brings up a really interesting point. I think a lot of the debate that I see out there, especially around the issues of social justice, a lot of people try to figure out where does personal responsibility end and where does historical context begin and where does the line blur in between that, right? Like, something I used to ask myself, especially when I was a more recent grad, was why do some people, quote unquote, make it out of the hood and some people don't? And I don't expect you to necessarily have the answer to that, because it's an incredibly complex thing. But from your perspective and your worldview, where's the balance between that?
Yeah, you're coming with all the super dope, super complex questions. Yo, it's so interesting, man. Like, at again, 17-year-old me was and again, this is probably why I vibe with you, Rich, because I probably saw some of myself in you at that age, because I thought I knew a lot of everything too, right? So when I first got to college, right? So I would be the only Black dude in a lot of my classes, right? And at first, like, I was like, yeah, it's because, you know, you work hard, you do well, and all those things, right? And then when I really stopped and, like, really thought about things, no, right? It's not because I was so much better or smarter or well-positioned. Like, it wasn't those things. It was someone had taken a chance on me. Someone had given me access to information, and someone had believed in me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The reason why certain people make it out, and I don't want to take, like, work ethic off the table, right? That matters. But so much of it is access to information, right? Like you were talking about before, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you don't know that said scholarship exists, right, you can't apply for it. Absolutely. If you don't know that this is if you don't know about this college, right, if you don't know about this opportunity, if you don't know about the College Access Center, right, if you don't know about these different things, right, like, you're not going to be able to move in that way, right? You're not going to have access to those things. So I think one of the first reasons why some people make it out and some people don't is access to information.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, I think that's huge.
I have to ask you, man, like, what has your experience been with the health and the nutrition space? I remember we were chatting the other day, and you told me that you got into running a little bit. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I will. It's funny. So I grew up and I was pretty slim. Not athletic built, not like in shape, just slim, right? It was just genetics, right? I wasn't eating well. I wasn't there was none of that, right? But in college, right, you're eating more. You're drinking, hopefully after the age of 21, right? But but yeah, right. But you're eating badly. You're not sleeping a lot of hours. You're up all types of hours. Yeah. And just it's a train wreck, right?
Yeah.
A fun train wreck, but a train wreck.
And
what happens is your metabolism changes as you get older, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Rich, I'm sure you understand this more than I do because you, like, write about it in podcasts and stuff like that. But I can speak from my personal experience. I started to get bigger and I didn't realize, right? So, like, because it doesn't happen overnight, right? It's not one slice of pizza that did it, right? It happens gradually, right? And when it's happening to you, you don't always notice.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, man, like, even if, sorry to interrupt, but, like, even if you are always the chubby person and one day you wake up and you're 300 plus pounds and you're like, holy shit, how did I get here?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I completely get what you're saying there.
Yeah. So there's two things that kind of did it for me, I guess. So one of them, so I developed sleep apnea.
Mm.
So if you're not familiar with sleep apnea, you pretty much you can stop breathing in your sleep, right?
Yeah.
It's just a lot of pressure on your organs, just pumping blood through the body and stuff like that. I don't know the science behind it, right? But it's not good. it's not good at all. So I had developed sleep apnea. So that was one sign. I remember I was actually playing basketball with a friend, one of my best friends. And again, right, like self-image, right? It's an interesting thing because I still would not have considered myself like a bigger guy. Like I wouldn't have, right? Because in my mind, right, I was skinny. I'd always been skinny. So we're playing basketball. This story sticks with me because it's funny. It's actually a little mean, but it's funny. So so I forgot what I was talking about, but I said something like, because my friend, like he's in shape, and he was like skinnier than or whatever like that. And I was like, yeah, you know, like I was like, when skinny guys like us, when we're doing blah blah, and he stopped and he's like, skinny guys like who? And then just
no.
And like proceeded to like laugh for probably a good minute of just nonstop laughter.
Yo, that's so funny. Oh, not it, funny, but
yeah, right. Funny, traumatic, funny, I guess, yeah. Right?
Oh man!
And I'm gonna make him listen to this episode too. You know, like, you have to listen. Yeah.
Oh man!
But in any event, right? I then like realized, like, wait, like I'm the way I viewed myself and how I actually am existing in the world.
Yeah.
Those are not the same. So part of it was vanity, not being just being honest, and part of it was health.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, let me figure something out, right? So I got into running a little bit, right? And I hated it. I was like, this is miserable, right? Yeah. So I actually joined a running group because I was like, all right, well, I've always been a very social person. Like, I love people.
Yeah.
Right. So getting me to run 3 miles by myself is rough. Getting me to run 6 miles with people is a lot easier. Right. Mm-hmm. And that sounds counterintuitive. Right. But the distance, right, becomes easier when I had people with me. So I joined the Boogie Down Bronx Runner. Shout out to them. I follow them on IG. They're really dope. And I found a camaraderie in that space, like in that group. And it was all different, like all different body sizes, all different ages. And it was like a family, and like there was no like slow shaming, right? So if you were a slower runner, it wasn't like, oh, what's wrong with you? No, it was like, yo, let's all do this.
Yeah.
Let's do this together. There were different pacing groups, right? So if you were one of the people who was faster, right, you didn't have to feel like Kevin was slowing you down, right?
Yeah,
you had another pace group that you could run with. But everyone had a space and a place. I'm a little sad because of COVID. We haven't run together since the beginning of March. But people have been running solo and stuff like that and posting it on the Instagram. So that was one of the things for me, right? Finding running has been helpful. I'm still not where I need to be with the eating, if I'm totally honest, right? It's hard for me. I'm trying to get to a place of moderation.
Okay.
My wife will tell you I can be sort of an all or nothing type of individual.
Okay.
Right. So I'll go like 2 weeks where I'm not going to touch a carb because again, right, there's also myths about health, right? Like carbs are evil. That's not exactly true. That's not like, as a person who does this, I'm sure you could tell me, nope, that's not exactly how that works, Kevin.
Not exactly how it works.
But yeah, so I'm exactly right. So I'll be like, you know what? I'm not going to touch a carb for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I'll be sad. I'll be like, no, but I'm really, and then I'll like eat really badly. Right. So I think, so the food stuff, as we're talking about my journey, I'm not there yet. I'm getting a handle on the exercise. Right. So I've been, I've been running a couple times a week. I'm trying to do like, calisthenics workouts at home. I'm not where I need to be, but I'm seeing progress and I'm moving. Yeah. The food stuff is like kind of, it ebbs and flows.
I'll tell you, man, that like, it's a lifelong process and it's a journey. And it's one of the things I talk to people a lot about is It's how you think about it and how you try to make it easier for yourself. And from the sound of it, you don't make it very easy for yourself.
I do not.
Well, look, man, like the number one example I always give to people about my health journey is has to do with coffee. And people who have heard me before have heard this, but the idea for me was I drink a lot of coffee, like 4 or 5 cups a day. And I was like, oh man, like if I'm putting 3-4 sugars in that coffee 3-4 times a day, I'm putting milk in it, putting all this other you know, flavorings and stuff, that stuff adds up. And I knew that, like, I wasn't going to go from that to, like, straight no sugar and enjoy it. Because part of the thing and the thinking for myself was that, like, I need to make this sustainable for me. And I need to be able to make sure that this can last and this can be a permanent change. So part of the building, just like you build your muscles, right? And part of how you build your tolerance for for running, you have to think about your nutrition the same sort of way, is that you have to build towards it. So I never recommend cutting bread out 100% and never having a carb ever again, because you're going to realize, man, I really miss bread. So what I tell people is that, like, I slowly cut out sugar from my diet. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with a little bit less this time. I'm going to go with a little bit less sugar, and then a little bit less after that, and a little bit less after that. And I slowly... until I started adding no sugar, but I just had like the milk and stuff. And little by little, I started reducing, and now I drink my coffee black. And now people look at me like, oh man, like you're drinking your coffee black. Like that's disgusting. But I'm like, you know what? Actually, now I get the difference in the taste between qualities of coffee. So now I found this thing where like I love tasting different kinds of coffee and different brews of coffee because I can taste the differences now that it is the flavor isn't being masked by all the sugar. And that's like a small example, right? So like with things like bread, with things like other carbs, it's like, well, maybe you could cut back on the frequency of certain kinds of carbs. Maybe you can cut back on the specific kinds of carbs, right? Like, so maybe if you have a sandwich for lunch every day, as an example, well, maybe you opt for the whole wheat bread, right? Or maybe like once a week you say, I'm going to go for a wrap instead. And making those little adjustments over time is what makes the whole process a lot easier overall. And I'll tell you that, like, you get to a point where eventually you're like, man, like, I didn't realize how much I haven't been missing it or how much I haven't been having it, because it becomes habit.
No, it's 100% true, right? Like, like one of my guilty pleasures has always been, and I know this is like the worst thing, has been soda, right? Mm-hmm. But when I like stopped drinking soda for a while, when I like had some, I was like, this does not taste good. Mm-hmm. I was like, it tastes really like it's burning my throat almost, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely agree that your body can definitely like get used to and stop missing certain things. But the moderation piece and how you got kind of like remove things slowly, I think is the piece that I'm still learning, if you will.
No, look, man, it's everyone's at their own pace, right? And everyone's sort of at their own journey. And I'll tell you this, like, I was talking to my dietitian friend last week, and she's like, dude, I still have chocolate cake all the time. It's just like, I don't have it as frequently as some people have chocolate cake. And there's room for all of these things. It's just how much of it you're having. But again, working progress for everyone. And it's, you know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with enjoying things. Because again, I still drink. I still, you know, go have, you know, a burger or whatever. But again, it's the frequency thing that we slowly work on. You know, you actually inspired me for once we're able to do like group running thing again, to like try to do a group run, because I keep hearing that group runs are great, because I do it by myself, and I consider myself a pretty slow guy running, because I'm like, I'm in better shape, but like I'm still, you know, 215 pounds, and so for me, still being a little bit more built, I'm just like, okay, like I don't enjoy it as much. I'll probably be in the back group with everyone else trying to take it easy, but it sounds like a really good time.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it, right? Like it's also certain things that you might do normally, right? So like if I'm running by myself, I'll have like my headphones in. When you're running in a group, like you're not going to want to, right? Like you're running, but you're also having a conversation, right? It's a really cool dynamic.
Yeah. The interesting thing I want to bring up about running, because I've talked to a couple of different running people at this point, and there's a conversation around about right now about running and social justice in particular, with the death of Ahmaud Arbery, and making sure that there are spaces for people of color to be able to run safely. And I think that I didn't grow up with people running in my neighborhood, and maybe they were running for different reasons, but like, you know, we didn't grow up with like joggers. We didn't grow up with like watching people like do this like weird motion. So like, how is it that we can make something that is, as in theory, accessible, like running, be more accessible in our communities? Is it groups like Boogie Down Runners?
Yeah, I think that's, I definitely think that's a part of it, right? So like, I think you, again, it's this access to information, right? So like, yeah. I thought that running was something that white people did in Central Park. Sometimes way later than they should, but never in like my neighborhoods, right? Yeah. So it wasn't something that you think about, right? Yeah. So the cool thing about a running group like Boogie Down Bronx Runners, right? And I'm plugging them because I'm a part of it, but also because they've been influential for me.
Yeah.
Is that like they run throughout the Bronx, like they run in the hood, right? They're not like, so you'd be surprised how many people have joined the group just from seeing us running together, right? Mm. And we have really cool swag and stuff like that, singlets and different things and hats.
Cool swag is where it's at, man.
There you go, right? but all of that, and people have seen it and said, hey, well, how can I become part of this? How can I run with you? And people who weren't necessarily runners before, right?
Yeah.
But seeing that was like, you know what? I think I could do that, right? And it's a pretty diverse group. You have some of everybody, but there's a heavy Black and Latinx population in there, right?
Love that.
You know what I mean? So seeing people in your hood, running through your hood, not running from anything, right? But just running in your hood, and like having a good time and smiling and stuff like that, you're like, I want to do, how do I get to be part of that? Yeah. Why, let me do that. I want to do that too. Can I do that?
I think
seeing it, I think that matters, right? Like, I think just seeing those things are such a, because again, right? So when I was young, I like my mom got me playing tennis, right? Mm. But that was because there was like a tennis bubble in our neighborhood, right? But like, that wasn't something that I would have thought of on my own. Like, hey, mom, I want to play tennis.
Yeah.
No, they're like, oh, wait, they're giving out free tennis lessons to young people in this neighborhood. Let's go do that. Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
So the idea behind it is like representation, right? Seeing that stuff matters.
Mm. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Once again, seamlessly helped me with my upcoming transition about representation and voices. You are the co-host of a podcast live from the Bronx. Tell me and the listeners a little bit about that show.
Yeah, no doubt. So live from the Bronx, we are the podcast that celebrates Bronx creative and change makers. That's our tagline.
I love this like little elevator pitch thing that you're doing right now. You like puffed up your chest. You're like, oh, all right, time to plug my show.
So the idea behind this, myself and my co-host Jay, and cool thing about Jay actually was a College Access Center young person as well. He wasn't my student directly, right? But he was.
Okay.
But he definitely went through the College Access Center, and him and I. we became friends, right? Over time, we became, and this is what I mean about the age gap shrinking, right?
Yeah.
Because we're both grown-ups now, we're both, and he's in education, right? So we have a lot of things going on.
Right.
And we actually, it's funny, we actually reconnected through a common friend. Because when I first saw that he was like in the same industry and stuff like that, I'd see him at conferences. I'd give him like the grown-up handshake and stuff like that. And I kind of go do my own thing. Cause I'm like, oh, you used to be a former student in the program, but through a common friend, we actually ended up, going on a vacation together. Right. The three of us. Right. And I realized, I was like, yo, he's a dope human being. Right. He grew up to be, someone who is really cool, who like cares about people, who's an activist, right? Who's
right.
Super smart. And so Jay does a bunch of different things. He's like a professor, he works for the Department of Education. Really, really dynamic individual. And we would always have these really great conversations about different things, about politics, right? About history, right? About oppression, right? About social injustices, right? And we have conversations about what was happening in the Bronx. And we're like, yo, we should have a podcast, right? We should talk about these things. And another thing that we always kind of thought about was like, the Bronx has like really negative stereotypes that are like, that have existed for the longest, right?
100%.
People still think that the Bronx is burning, right? Like people still act like that's a thing.
Yeah.
So we were like, you know what we're going to do, right? We are going to highlight people doing dope things in the Bronx. We are going to shout. So it's funny. I had messaged you a while ago about the show because you were actually, and I didn't even tell you this before, but I actually had told Jay this, right? It was actually serendipity that you reached out because, right, I wanted you on the show anyway. And the idea is highlighting people who are doing dope and dynamic things either in the Bronx or people who are from the Bronx because the narrative has to change.
Absolutely. The Bronx never leaves you, man. Like I told you at the beginning of this, like you can leave the Bronx physically, but like every time I'm back, I drove through this morning on my way to Connecticut and I was like, there's something about the energy, and I'm not a spiritual guy, I'm not a religious guy, but there is something very tangible when I return home that is like, no, like this is, there's something here that breeds really, really special people.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that, right? look at the two of us, right? There you go, right? But yeah, no, so that's the idea behind it. We're a fairly new podcast. We started in January, and it's been a really interesting journey thus far.
Yeah.
And we're excited for what'll come next.
Awesome. And I'm assuming that your podcast can be found on all the great platforms that you can find podcasts these days.
You are a better promoter than I am. Yes, you can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Google Podcasts. So like Rich said, all of the places where podcasts are found, we are there.
Absolutely. Well, look, man, I hope everyone checks it out because there's definitely a lot of magic coming from the Bronx in all shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, sexual orientations, ideologies. One of the best places on planet Earth. I'm speaking so biasedly. So definitely
you're speaking,
excited.
You're speaking facts.
Yeah, I'm speaking, you're speaking facts.
And in a couple of weeks, Rich is actually going to be on our show. So definitely check out that episode of Live from the Bronx as well.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, look, Kev, I'm going to say this publicly, but I would also tell you this privately. I am incredibly, incredibly grateful. I alluded to this before, but I am incredibly grateful to have had the opportunity to meet you. And to have had the opportunity to get the bits of information that I got along the way, because without that, again, there's no bodega body, but like there's no college for me. There's no income that I have now. That center absolutely projected me forward, and I talk to people about the value of those things all the time. So I'm hoping that whoever's listening, you know, no matter if you work in corporate America or you're a person from the Bronx, you're a person from India, like, I hope that you understand the value of information and how information can change a young person's life, because the work that you do, you will never truly know the impact of it. I think that that's the magic of it, is that there are going to be someone's grandkids someday that are going to become president of the United States because of the work that you do. And that is where I think the true value lies.
Yo, well, I'm speechless. Thank you. Thank you. That was super deep and profound. And thank you for being you, man. Like I said before, just getting to see someone's like transformation and their journey, right? It's such a powerful thing, right? It's such an amazing thing. And again, I was part of a fraction of it, but to see the amazing things that you're doing now is so profound. And to see here that you're like giving back through iMentor and stuff like that is truly amazing. So thank you for doing the stuff that you're doing. It reinforces the why I do my work, right? So it all kind of, so you're inspiring me, and also your health journey definitely has been inspiring me as well.
I try a little bit day by day, man.
No doubt. Well, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, man, of course. Well, go check out Live from the Bronx. Kev, thank you so much, brother. Take care, and we will be hearing from each other soon.
No doubt. I look forward to it.
Later. Okay. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Bodega Body Podcast. My name, of course, is Rich Sabata. Go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Sabata. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bodega Body. And for more of the content that I write, please make sure to go check out BodegaBody.com. Also, if you want to come on the show, tell your story, have any general questions, you can feel free to reach out to me at rich@bodegabody.com. Take care, folks. See you next week.
I took a nigga pack when I was broke, almost 20 with no money, up in college lacking hope. Had the whole dorm clicking, you know niggas gotta smoke, wiping out the competition. They know David had the dope, couldn't walk in my butters, they only fit G's. Nigga, my wrist freeze. Niggas play Superman and get Chris Reeve, all from a text message. I have your girl on you, you'll be stretched out before you send your next message. I don't like niggas, beat around the bush for what? I'm really nice, nigga, ask around and look them up. I'm in a deli with a bottle trying to see what's goody. Yeti side, streets cold, you gon' need your
okay, money. None of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride.
I feel like a precious pebble lodged under the sea. Since I was 8, I knew a 9-to-5 wasn't for me. Shit ain't always how you want it to be. That's why I gotta work hard. My ancestors had to run to be free. At 15, I was running the streets, drinking liquor, puffing the gweets, cutting from school, fucking with freaks. By 21, I was sunk in the seat. G-Ride, bumping some beats, probably looking for something to eat. During my childhood, nothing was sweet. I wore ponies to school. The mother niggas had ups on their feet. It never fazed me though. I knew I was more intelligent, and the gift I had made it even more relevant. When I rap, I touch many like a known therapist. Cause I'm packed with more passion than a gold medalist. I say something, they gon' jack it, nigga, no letterman. I can pop at any time, shit, there's no telling it.
Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a god.